You're watching Notepad, and I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. We are again continuing with our series of discussion towards what has happened in 2019 and what is to happen next in 2020. For this particular episode, I have with me Foo Gi Jan. He's the Managing Director of CBRE WTW, here to discuss the property situation in Malaysia over the past year and what we can think about for the property sector next year. Mr. Foo, thanks again for taking the time to speak with us. The first time we met was through a panel discussion a few weeks back, and we talked about micro issues affecting Malaysia. I want to ask you a little bit about the continuation of that conversation that we had about, in particular, property market. When people think about investment, property is the biggest asset class of investment. Let's look at how property prices have performed for this year. Maybe your insight into the sector.
Thank you, Ibrahim, for having me in the show. Now, 2019 has been quite a challenging period, a quite similar trend as what we experienced in 2018. But the good part of it is the first half of 2019, there's a positive sign show of a growth, though very minimum of less than 1% in terms of growth. But to me, I think as a property analyst, I think it's still something very, very commendable in the light of the economic uncertainty and the headwind that we are facing either at the micro or at the external level.
Okay, let's split property prices, property types. We have the office property, we have, I guess, warehousing and all the other stuff. Of course, we have housing and private residential. Let's focus this conversation right now just for the private residential. What is the prices like for the past 1 year, and how is it going to be trending towards early of next year?
Okay, yeah, residential always been a dominated component of the property industry in Malaysia that contributed almost about 65% in terms of volume and also value. So these are the driver of the market. What happened during the 2019, during the first half of 2019, the prices trading very much sideways.
Okay.
Meaning to say, price is holding, but across the segment, of course, the higher end of the market, there may be sign of weakening, sign of a consolidated price in terms of price have been adjustment. But those in the mass market, you're talking about affordable housing, prices are still holding and show a small growth. Of course, I think if you ask most of the player, developer in the market, everybody say market is bad.
Okay.
But as a property analyst, I look at it's a healthy sign. So market should not be growing, trading at always a double-digit growth of what happening during the so-called bull run during 2010 to 2014.
Okay.
So after 2014, everything had been really very flattish. Well, that is consistent with the market, and if we look at the growth of the take-home pay, the average pay have only trading around in the region about 3.5 to 5%.
Yeah.
Whereas during the bull run, property had been growing almost double digit.
Yeah.
So there's a gap of catching up.
So look, market prices, it's very simple. If you put a price and you want to sell a house at, for instance, R500,000, for instance, and there's nobody to buy, it's not the fault of them not buying at that particular price. It's you setting that wrong price. Is there a time where now property owners, and they want to think about reselling their property, they have to now be realistic and push down that price? Is that a reality?
I agree with you, Ibrahim. I think, look into this. I think during the so-called bull run, the prices are very much benchmarking by the primary market, meaning any developer launching a project after a project. It's very obvious phase one, when you add X dollars, when phase two, they have increase to show that you get a good buy on the phase one.
Yeah.
Now, I think the last 2 years we have seen a switch. the benchmarking is on the secondary market. So it's healthy, meaning the masses decide the price rather than a few selected one determine what need to pay.
Okay.
Right? So to me, that is a healthy moving forward. You have to follow the majority rather than the so-called who calling the shot.
Okay. At the end of this interview, I'm just going to be asking you some pro tips in terms of property buyers. But for now, let's stick to the industry. I want to ask you about the occupancy rates of residential property in Malaysia. Is it fair for us to say that a lot of properties are in Malaysia, they're not occupied?
Okay. I think that would relate very much to the overhang situation at the moment we see now. There's two parts of it now. Overhang is in relation to property that have been in the market for 9 months and not sold. That is really a big concern, everybody know. You rightfully put that the other concern is whether the actual utilization rate, even though the balance of it, those apart from the overhang, already been sold, but it's still not occupied. So you are right. You have seen, if you take a drive around the city, some of the projects have been completed 5 years, 6 years, but you take a drive at the evening, you see how many lights on, even though 100% sold. So that is a bit of concern whether all this money have been put where there's no return.
Okay. Just in my housing area, right, we have about, in my own taman, there's about 30 houses. In the taman, whatever, WhatsApp group, there's only about 10 or 12 people. That means more than half is empty. And I walk around my house right in front of my park, more than half is empty. And that's just one. Of course, that's one data point. Right? And my residential area is not Malaysia. But if this is extrapolated throughout the rest of the country and we have all these empty houses in place, isn't this indicative that people are punting, people are betting on houses instead of, you know, thinking about it as an investment asset material?
Yes and no. I think when you say as an investment asset, so perhaps these people are buying, it's not so much driven by the yield, the return on the renter. Mm. These people are buying on the expectation of appreciation in value.
So speculation lah.
Well, I think it is a bit of, during the bull run, there's a higher percentage of speculation aspect. Of course, at the last 4 years, you have seen that have been tapered down. So a less speculative market.
Then how do we explain the bizarre scenario right now where property developers are consistently launching new projects? What are they trying to achieve?
Well, the good thing about Malaysia is we still have very high saving rate, right? So general public looking at the what do you invest? If you go into the putting money in the bank or putting money in your pillow, well, what is the growth like? So perhaps I think if you are looking at some form of investment, in the long term, property is still one of the very best and safe bet in terms of hedge against inflation. So Asian sentiment, Asian mentality that would rope in, then generally I think, well, property is still the best bet.
Okay, we'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion with CBRE WTW. Don't go anywhere. Staying on with us. Tonight we are discussing at length about the property situation in Malaysia with CBRE WTW. I have with me the Managing Director, Fu Yi Jen. Mr. Fu, very recently the Minister of Housing spoke at length about trying to get foreign investors, including those from China, to come and buy the property that are above 2 million ringgit. And she argues that this is perhaps one of the ways that we can address the overhang situation in that particular price range. And this has met with mixed reactions from the population. Why do you think that the population is actually having some mixed views about this particular call to action or call to invite foreigners to come and buy that price range of a house?
The recent call by KPKT with regard to the foreign ownership, I recall mention about China, Hong Kong in particular. From our perspective, I think this should not be just confined to that region. I think we need to look into our industry at a larger context, broader. We have to be very much multinational.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I think we also have to take care of the local interest. Now, if the issue of to clear up overhang, we should not mix up with the local interest. So the call by the minister to bring down the price to 600,000. I think that should be explained clearly is confined to the overhang situation, unsold product, rather than new launches that impact the local interest.
Yeah.
So I think fundamentally we are a very small country. We don't have a large land mass for everyone to come in, but the local interest have to be put at the first priority.
There's also the call for the P2P lending mechanism to allow for first-time home buyers. This was first mooted last year and championed by our finance minister. Of course, things are slowly developing, but we will see some developments on this front in 2020. What do you think about this whole P2P lending? Is it a good idea, or are we getting more Malaysians in debt unnecessarily?
Yeah, at the era of disruptive technology, I think there will be a lot of creative financing available in the market. Having P2P financing alternative to actually for the first-time home buyer, to me, I welcome this. But this have to be taken with a bit of cautious. The buyer have to look into this generally not so much pure home ownership per se, because this is very a kind to investment scheme.
Yeah.
So that have to be taken in that context.
Yeah.
People have to be cautious of what they are the what is their game plan. Are they going into buying the unit,
yeah,
or buying into investment?
Yeah.
So there's a certain risk element attached to it, and
yeah,
you have to be all the time cautious about, yeah, that. And fundamentally, to me, to the those people who are going into this, you have to look into a very basic thing, the fundamental thing. It should be driven by the yield and the return.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about yield and return. How do you intend to, if you're a property owner, how do you intend to set your expectations accordingly moving forward for 2020? Can we really expect prices to hold at this particular range, at least for the first half of next year? Or are we going to see price drop?
Well, overall, I will see the price will be moving sideways. However, I think we need to dissect the market to look into which segment of the market you are in.
And of course, location.
And location.
Yeah.
Because the higher end of the market, I will see the market will be trading down.
Okay.
Right? Whereas those in the masses and the lower part of the market,
yeah,
perhaps will be holding,
okay,
steadily.
Let's look at the locations per se. In our panel discussion a few weeks ago, we spoke about some areas that have this weird expectations of mismatch prices, including, what was it, Kuala Muda?
Yeah.
Would be one of the examples,
yeah,
of markets not having the necessary price range for that market need. There's also oversupply in some areas where there's low population with no intention to grow that population, no access of road, highways, there's no ideas why. You know, developers are building a lot of houses in those kind of areas. Do you think that there is an opportunity for home buyers to actually buy a house, not necessarily for investment, but for them to stay in? But we have to set expectations accordingly. It might not be downtown KL, but it might be somewhere else. Is that the kind of expectations that we should set for ourselves as home buyers or potential home buyers?
No. You see, moving forward, I think the national level, we are driving more on the rail in terms of public transport and so forth.
Yeah.
So if you are really picking up the right property, moving forward, we are very much heavily subsidized in terms of the fuel, petrol and other. So this will going to be very expensive in the future. So I think you need to put your money where the public transport are located. So these are very, very crucial for the first home buyer to pick up very much on TOD, transport-oriented development, as the base for them to pick up. So that location in relation to transport.
Yeah, I see what you mean, because the Minister of Consumer, Deputy Minister of Consumer, Chong Chen Jian, just this week announced that fuel subsidies are going to be slowly removed for RON 95. It's going to be 1 to 2 cent increase every week until it hits market price. So we don't know what that market price is. Right now it's 2 ringgit 8 cent, 208 for RON 95. It can very well hit 3 ringgit if that market price deems to be. And when things are at 3 ringgit per litre, things are starting to really eat up your wallet. There's also a conversation of tolls being bought over by government and some other toll concessionaires going to increase their prices accordingly. So this is going to drive prices up. Do you think that these two things should really be at the forefront of that conversation of how you buy property? You were talking about, you know, property with transport on demand. Do you think that that kind of, you know, cost in terms of travel time as well as cost towards car and toll, that's going to be a key factor here.
Yeah. If you look at the evolution of urbanization in any major city, either Europe, US or Japan, near homes, even Singapore, I think all is driven by this. So generally, I think gone are the day that you need to own a car, that you need to be in the all landed property. So on the government side, I will urge them, I believe they have to push really hard on relax in terms of allocation for car parking requirement. It's no longer a necessity.
Yeah.
I think the authority is still putting a fine to the developer who are not providing car park. Why you need a car park? You don't need a car. Yeah. Everybody is using public transport. The other issue is with regard to the density development. So the land is the scarce item there. There's the only way to build high, right? So those are the things. You cannot sacrifice green area. You still have to have the football field on the ground.
Yeah, and green lungs to support the society.
Yeah, so those are the things that the only way is to allow higher density development, but not compromising the infrastructure facility, basic necessity like a garden, football field, right? We don't have kids running about on the garden anymore.
Yeah. Let's talk also about herd mentality. And this is key, because herd mentality is the biggest plague that is afflicting all home buyers. If they see one guy buying, another guy buying, they have to buy as well. And that will just generate an idea where everybody buys something that not necessarily everybody needs. What do you think about this herd mentality buying? Or herd mentality selling, for that matter?
Okay. I think these are the things that have been not as much as what we have seen during the bull run during 2010, 2011. I'll put a blame to the people like property, guru, investor club, and so forth. I think these are the ones who are going around, try to say you don't need money to buy property. So those definitely, and telling people you need to queue overnight for launching of the project. These are the herd mentality, right? Everybody jumping without really knowing what they are in. Example, I have seen one guy all the way from Sandakan buying a shoebox unit in KLCC. Didn't really realize that unit even smaller than his so-called friend low-cost house in Sandakan. Right, and they say, wow, they pay $1 million in KLCC. So what are you paying? You are paying a unit less than a smaller low-cost house in Sandakan.
Yeah.
Right, so everybody buying based on herd mentality, right?
So we have to think about whether or not that's going to happen again, I guess.
Unfortunately, people have a short memory. So we have to really remind the investor and the buyer on outside there. I think you all have to really go by fundamental, what is your need, right? Do you need 10 houses, right? Do you spread your investment? It's not just buying in one location or one type of asset class. So these are depending on how deep is your pocket and what is your investment strategy. So forget about herd mentality. Generally, go to the fundamental, right? Talking about what is the yield? Is there enough to pay for the mortgage and other thing, right? So and looking at the growth factor. So you are buying into two things, yield and growth.
Okay. We'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll conclude our discussion with CBRE WTW. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me CBRE WTW talking about property prices and property landscape. But the bigger question right now is, do you even need to buy property? That's an idea that has been floated by Western democracy countries, including those of Germany, where practically no one buys a house anymore over there. They generally just rent, either short term or long term, but rent is the answer. Mr. Fu, do you think that that is an option for Malaysians to continue to rent? Or do you think that we eventually have to buy property?
Well, I would say yes and no. I would say yes, we are still growing. The population is still growing at 1.3%. The urbanization in terms of migration from the rural area to the urban center is still happening. So we will probably hit the peak of the urbanization ratio of about close to 75-80% in 10 years' time. So, of course, there's still a need. On the other side of the coin, we are looking at affordability, right? And the prices have shot right to the sky, and the new millennial will not be able to afford. So the option will be looking at the other option, right? It may be another form of ownership, in multiple ownership, co-ownership. That is happening in Europe at the moment. In UK, you have multiple ownership where people are co-living, co-sharing. Of course, the other spectrum we are looking into, the millennials who are not really into attached to a long-term investment. They don't want to buy a car, they don't want to buy asset to them. So the option will be looking at the rental market, right? So in Malaysia, perhaps I think the government need to encourage a lot more by providing the infrastructure in terms of legislation to protect the interests of both landlord and tenant. So okay, that will provide you the ecosystem of just like when you check in into Airbnb, the landlord can review you, you can review landlord.
And it's an extremely healthy check and balance system. Airbnb itself will come in and verify the situation, whether or not the property is intact, everything is as reported. Airbnb will check on the tenant, whether or not they got the necessary requirements from the, you know, and of course complaints are looked at, and that is providing a situation where people are extremely comfortable with using Airbnb, both the tenant and also the landlord. And if you say that the government can be as effective or as productive as something like Airbnb, I think that would generate some sort of healthy ecosystem for this
rental market. Yep, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. All right, that was my conversation with Fu Gi Jan of CBRE WTW. Remember, if you missed any part of this interview, just head on to astrawani.com. Look for Notepad over there. Malaysia in 2020 is going to be a big topic of discussion moving forward. Let me know your thoughts about what you think should be discussed moving forward for Malaysia next year. And of course, if there's any comments, share with us at 501 Awani or Ibrahim Sani Net. That's it from me for this particular episode. Thanks very much for watching and goodbye. Thank you.
Thank you.